Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. Governor Jesse Ventura isn't amused at the prospect of a new comic strip in the St. Paul Pioneer Press. The paper's editorial page editor announced on Sunday that a new strip called Ventura Land would be launched as yet another observation on the thrilling adventures of our governor. The governor's attorney has already served notice that if the paper crosses the boundary between, quote, political commentary and pure commercial use, end quote, legal action could be the next step. Well, we'd like to know what you think. Where is that line? Is the governor being exploited? We'll talk today to Jane Kirtley. She's professor and director of the Silha Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. She joins us here in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
What's your reaction to news of a new comic strip?
Delight. I think it's great. I think it's fabulous. I love the notion of lampooning anybody who's in political office, and I think Jesse Ventura is an irresistible topic.
Now, what is your take on, I mean, obviously none of us have seen this comic strip, so we don't really know what it is. But what's your take on Ventura's response to it?
I take a very dim view of his response to it, although I suppose it's absolutely predictable that he would fulminate over it. This strikes me as sounding more like something we would expect to hear from some dictator in a Latin American banana republic. You know, I've trademarked my image. I'm going to go after you if you exploit me for commercial purposes. This is journalism. This is political commentary. This is what elected officials have to put up with. And, you know, I don't want to hear about it.
Well, you know, let me just play governor's advocate for a moment. One could make the case that unlike a third world dictator, unlike, in fact, most politicians, here's someone who had a brand identity, to use that marketing phrase, long before he entered into politics. If you look at other comic strips, my goodness, the Snoopy memorabilia, as we all know, is legion. And it is commercial. People make money. They buy a Snoopy mug. I'm thinking of Bloomsbury characters back when that strip was around. Garfield the cat. You can buy an air freshener, for heaven's sakes, that is in the shape of Garfield. Is it that premature and is it that erroneous for the governor's advocates to say, hey, wait a minute, watch what you're doing there?
Well, I think it is premature because, I mean, let's face it, we don't know. This cartoon, this comic strip may not take off. It may never have the exploitation value of some of the strips you mentioned. And bear in mind that Calvin and Hobbes, for example, was never exploited commercially. The cartoonist chose not to do that. All he ever did was publish it and publish books, but he never had other kinds of consumer goods. I don't know what the Pioneer Press's plan is, and I suppose there might be an argument that if they get into that kind of use, secondary use, we would call it, there might be an issue, but I think right now all we're talking about is political commentary. There is good case law that says you can use trademarked images for political commentary and news commentary, and the trademark dilution statute that was enacted a couple of years ago makes that really clear.
What's the difference between Garfield and political commentary?
Well, Garfield, I don't think, purports to have a whole lot of political viewpoints.
Well, let me rephrase the question then, because if you pick up the comics page, you can see religious commentary, you can see political commentary, you can see all sorts of commentary.
Sure.
And so what's the difference between a comic strip on a comics page and a comic strip on the editorial page?
Well, I think Doonesbury is a very good example of exactly what you're talking about, because some newspapers always run Doonesbury on the editorial page, some run it on the comics page. It's considered sort of a hybrid. And I think that, the history of political cartooning in this country, as you know, goes back 200 years. Whether it's a strip cartoon or whether it's a single panel, I think the concept is the same. The Pioneer Press has said that what their plan is, as I understand it, is to put this on their editorial page. I think they see it as an extension of the rest of their political commentary. But if you're talking about which has more First Amendment protection, it's about the same, although the Supreme Court has said repeatedly that political speech enjoys the highest protection. The point is, though, that it's all news commentary. It's not an advertisement. And when you get into commercial speech, there's different kinds of constitutional protection for that. But that's not what's at stake here.
What's the difference between this strip that's coming out and say, Doonesbury. And what I'm thinking of is here, the governor has made frequent appearances, not at his own behest, obviously, in the strip Doonesbury.
I don't see any difference at all. Again, we're speaking without having seen Ventura Land yet, but based on what I understand it's going to be, I don't see any difference from a legal perspective at all. I think they're exactly the same, political commentary.
And what are the ethics of an editorial cartoonist?
Well, I think that an editorial cartoonist has an obligation to raise consciousness, to cause trouble, to be satirical, to ridicule. If the political cartoonist doesn't
do
it,
I'm going to stop you right there. We've got a state of journalism these days where people don't exactly feel cozy with the media, and here you are saying that one of the responsibilities of an editorial cartoonist is to ridicule. Why is that necessary?
I think it's because it's the role of a cartoonist, an editorial cartoonist, to hold up what I would characterize as a funhouse mirror to the world. It is through distortion, it is through hyperbole, that we get conversations going, that we get people thinking. Sometimes we make people laugh, and it seems to me that those are all important escape valves for some of the tension we enjoy in society. They encourage political debate, and they're fun. And these are all valuable things that even the U.S. Supreme Court has recognized.
What right does Governor Ventura have over his likeness and his name?
Well, he has a trademark, I guess, to his name and likeness, and this would extend to commercial exploitation. The way that the trademark dilution statutes generally work is that what we're talking about here is the notion that if somebody is using your trademarked image in a way that would cause confusion. For example, if this were drawn in such a way to make it look as if it was sanctioned by Jesse Ventura, then there might be a legal issue. But it's very clear under the Trademark Dilution Statute of 1997 that use of a trademarked image in political commentary and in news reporting is protected by the First Amendment.
We're talking to Jane Kirtley. She's a professor and director of the Silha Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law at the University of Minnesota. We're talking about the new comic strip Ventura Land, purporting to give us yet another slant, yet another observation on the adventures of our governor. We'd like to know what you make of this new comic strip. Are you looking forward to it? Do you think we need it? It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. I think it's appropriate, or at least fair, to say that the governor is wary of this new comic strip. We'd like to know if you think he's being exploited. It's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Now, there has been talk, of course, by the governor's advocates saying that if it crosses this line, they're going to sue. Well, explain to us, on what grounds could the newspaper be sued over this comic strip?
Well, this does happen occasionally, and it is based on trademark law. When you have a trademarked image or name or something like that, you can bring an action in federal court under the trademark dilution provisions, saying that the use of your trademark, not sanctioned by you, is causing you some kind of monetary damages. It's a cause of action for money. That's what it is. In extreme cases, you can get a cease and desist order. You can get an order from a court ordering whoever's using your image to stop using it. And this has happened.
I was just going to stop you there and say, the governor was able to stop, I believe it was a legislative employee who had come up with a series of just homemade greeting cards that used his image. He was able to stop her. Now, if he's able to stop that, why isn't he able to stop a cartoon?
Well, I don't know the details of that case, but what it sounds like to me is that was being used to create a commodity, a product that was going to be sold for the benefit of that individual, and that Governor Ventura wasn't going to get a slice of it.
How was that different from someone selling a newspaper and not giving him any profit?
The difference is that the law in this country historically has said that uses of somebody's name, image, or whatever in an editorial context that is not a non-advertising context is not considered a commercial use. Now, that seems kind of counterintuitive because you think, well, you sell a newspaper, so how can it not be a commercial use? But as a matter of law, it's not a commercial use. An ad is commercial use, but running something in a newspaper, even though that newspaper is sold for profit, is not. It's because of the First Amendment. The First Amendment protects the right of the news media to do this. And the notion, of course, is not just that it's the right of the news media, it's the right of the public to get this kind of information or get this kind of commentary.
We're going to go to Lynn and Robbinsdale. Welcome to Mid-Morning, Lynn.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm not sure if maybe the previous question answered. My comment was that if the St. Paul Primer Press is a commercial enterprise, And they're obviously using this to sell more newspapers, because I would imagine everybody in Minneapolis would like to see what this thing is going to look like. Aren't they then using that in a commercial way? What does your speaker think of that?
Okay. Well, and you know, if that were true, if that theory played out, then that would mean any time a news organization publishes a story about anything, it's for a commercial purpose, and they could be sued for it, or they could be ordered to stop reporting on it. You may not know this, but there was a case in Britain just at the end of December where Catherine Zeta-Jones and Michael Douglas, the actors, have sued a magazine for running photographs of their wedding after they had sold exclusive rights to another magazine to cover it. And these were non-authorized photographs, and they were very upset. The British court has said that they can move forward with their suit because they have the legal right to control which image of themselves will appear in which newspaper or which magazine. I don't think that would fly.
I was just
going to
say, but the British law is very different on these points than American law.
But this is the first time that Britain has ever recognized any kind of right of privacy like this, so it's really sent shockwaves through the system. But the point that I'm using to illustrate this for is simply to say that this is a distinction that was drawn between sort of this quasi-commercial use where they're peddling their image for money as opposed to straight news coverage. Had it been straight news coverage, my suspicion is that even in Britain there would not have been any question about whether they could have proceeded with their lawsuit.
Let's go to Sheldon in St. Paul. Sheldon.
Good morning.
Hi.
I think, first of all, that I'll look forward to buying a Pioneer Press to read this. I think it'll be fascinating, and I hope that he's going to get a lot of fun poked at him. On the other hand, I think the governor's incredibly thin-skinned. It shows once again how thin-skinned he is, that somehow he really doesn't grasp the idea of what it is to be a full-time politician and a governor, as evidenced by the chutzpah that he has when he talks about how he's a governor part of the time and the other time he's a private citizen, and he can go be an XFL commentator. So I think the more fun we poke at the governor, the better.
Amen. I agree, because I think that the healthiest thing about our democracy is not treating our politicians as if they're some kind of gods. They're humans. They have foibles. The key, of course, is to make sure that you're not engaging in commentary that is unfair, and unfairness can be in the eye of the beholder, certainly. But I think that the Pioneer Press is going to have plenty of people watching them, not the least of which being the governor, and I think this is going to be lots of fun.
We're going to go to John in Minneapolis. John, welcome to Mid-Morning. All right. John, sorry we missed you there. We're going to go to Nicholas, calling us from Hudson, Wisconsin. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
My
comment that I have this morning is if let's say we were a couple, let's say it was about 3 weeks ago when you were when we were debating, you know, the pros and cons or the appropriateness of the governor taking his moonlighting jobs, and specifically the bill that was raised in the legislature to limit such activities. And a lot of people stood up and said, no, you know, when we voted him in, we knew what he was like. We voted the person in, not he, a guy who we wanted to act like Arne Carlson once he got into the office. And so everybody supported him, or a lot of people supported his endeavors. And remember, a lot of people voted for him because we wanted to get a kick out of our governor anyways, you know, because we don't really care who runs the state. It's going to go fairly smooth either way. Now at least we've got somebody who there's lots of, you know, water cooler and morning discussion about. Now, it comes along this Ventura Land idea. And he's got to take that as a sidestep, as a side effect of what he's doing. In other words, yeah, we'll support him. He can do this moonlighting gigs if he wants. But yeah, if he wants to be out of the ordinary and a little on the outrageous side, then these are the things that are going to follow. And we are also going to support these type of things as well. That would be my comment.
Okay. Thanks, Nicholas.
Hooray. I'm glad.
We're going to go to Craig in Arden Hills. Craig, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Two quick points. One is, isn't an ongoing comic strip like this different than an editorial or a news story? And wouldn't that differentiate it between freedom of the press issues and revenue generation? And another point is, don't newspapers have a different set of standards when they deal with articles and pictures among themselves? Don't they have to pay for news stories from other news services and newspapers. Thank you. I'll take my comments off the air.
Craig, I want you to go back to that last point because it isn't quite clear to me what question you're asking there. What point are you trying to make there?
If I were a photographer and I went out and took a picture, I could sell that to the newspaper and they would pay that. Another newspaper, if they wanted to run that picture, wouldn't they also have to pay for that picture?
So are you trying to get to the question of commercial use here?
Don't they have a different set of standards as far as commercial use goes when they're working amongst themselves between different news organizations and news services?
Okay, I think in trying to figure out what you're talking about, I mean, you're quite right, of course, that if, a newspaper is a subscriber to the Associated Press, it pays for the privilege of running Associated Press stories. That's certainly true. I don't think that you're trying to suggest that it would be the right thing to require a news organization to pay every source that they were doing a story about, which would be the logical flow of what you're talking about here. I mean, I understand that Governor Ventura has trademarked his image, but to suggest that somebody who is the governor of the state ought to be paid basically a kickback every time you run a story about him. And one of the points you were making was that this is going to be a continuing strip. It's going to run once a week, I believe. Well, of course, the Pioneer Press and indeed all the papers in Minnesota cover Governor Ventura daily. If frequency were the test, then again, you would never be able to do news coverage of major public figures or political figures. It seems to me that we're kind of mixing issues here. No one's suggesting that if Governor Ventura, say, went out, took a photograph and offered it for sale to the Pioneer Press, that he couldn't sell it to the Pioneer Press if they chose to buy it, or that the Pioneer Press could not run a photograph he shot himself without compensating him for it. But this is a different issue. This goes to the heart of the question of whether a legitimate news subject is one that can basically be utilized for commentary as well as for news coverage.
It's almost as if with the governor we're continually debating what you do when someone in this 21st century has declared their very being a brand identity, and then that brand identity is the focus of news coverage. I mean, it's a thicket in a way.
It's so astonishing. And, of course, you know, there are athletes who have done similar kinds of things. I mean, I guess the governor qualifies as an athlete, too, in some respects. But
Now, Professor Kirtley, a little more respect here.
Well, I have no respect for much of anything except the First Amendment. I have to be honest when I say that. And I'm just so offended by the notion that someone who's so clearly not just a public figure but a political figure and one that is worthy and must be covered by the news media would attempt to use a ploy like this, which frankly strikes me as being a preemptive strike to try to scare off coverage, and also suggesting that he recognizes, because he's not a stupid guy, that if he was ever unhappy about one of these things, he'd have a very hard time suing for libel. He couldn't win. This is a way to kind of do an end run around that by saying, well, you know, I can't sue you for libel, but what I will do is bring the trademark law down to bear on you, and I think that's unworthy of it.
You are saying that you believe that the governor is trying to already intimidate and influence how this cartoon is drawn through his protest?
I can't be sure, of course, but I've seen this happen in other contexts where other organizations have tried to use trademark law when they knew that libel would not serve their purposes for one reason or the other. And I'm also pointing out that as an elected official and a very clear public figure, Governor Ventura knows, I'm sure, that after the Supreme Court rulings in cases like New York Times versus Sullivan, that the likelihood of him prevailing in a libel suit is about zero. So one way you can try to control coverage is to try to intimidate, and if you want to come up with a novel way, a novel legal theory, one way to do that would be to brandish the trademark law.
We're going to go to Chuck in Forest Lake. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. Just curious, without respect to the commercial aspects of these questions, has any satirical cartoonist in the past, a guy like maybe Oliphant, who was legendary with, I believe, the Washington Post, ever done this continuous dialogue on any one person, centered on a particular political character, and run a continuous dialogue?
You know, I'm not familiar with anything that has been quite this focused on any individual. You may remember the Little Abner strip a number of years ago, and Al Capp, as you probably know, focused on particular political characters. For example, he did a continuing lampooning of Senator Joe McCarthy during during those years. And that was a cartoon that I think most people would have said, although it had a lot of political commentary, and it fell under the category of just sort of a classic strip cartoon.
Oh, there was another classic political strip, and of course my mind is blanking on the name of it. I want to say Kudzu, and that isn't quite it.
Yeah, there is one called Kudzu.
No. This is terrible. I know someone's going to remember it.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yeah. And also, there was, in fact, a strip here in St. Paul at, I believe it was the Dispatch. But we'll find out because Bob from Mendota Heights is going to tell us that there was a comic strip focused on an individual politician, right?
Yes.
Why don't you go ahead?
It was called Supermayor.
And it was based on Charlie McCarthy.
The mayor of St. Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And I defy anybody, unless you're a real political junkie, to name any other mayor of St. Paul in the 1960s. And there's another one that kind of bears on it, the old Rocky and Bullwinkle show, which was, of course, very political. Somebody, and I don't know who it was, threatened to sue him. And William Conrad did an interview one time, and he said, they wrote back and said, sue us. We both need the publicity. And I think, now I am generally a supporter of Jesse Ventura. I voted for him, but I think it's time for him to lighten up.
Okay, thanks, Bob. And that strip, Supermayor, was drawn by Jerry Fearing, a longtime editorial cartoonist for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. Let's go to Alan in Woodbury. Alan, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call,
yeah.
And what a wonderful job your guest has. That must be an awful lot of fun. And as a caveat, I'd like to say that I generally support Jesse. I don't think he's doing a terribly bad job as governor, but yeah, I agree with the previous caller. He needs to lighten up. One of the parallels I want to make to the current debate is simply that I look at Ronald Reagan, and you know, he had a tough skin from going through Hollywood and critics and whatnot. But isn't the same thing happening here? And you know, is that a fair parallel to make? And second point would simply be that political cartoons in general, I think, keep the debate high because it dumbs some issues down to a graphic level that everyone can understand and sort of go, oh. Yeah, so that is the issue. You know, maybe it's inflated and, you know, somewhat lampooned, but it does make for more robust conversation. I think in some cases it just fosters conversation, period.
You know, let me just say, because I am a passionate admirer of cartooning in general, I don't think it dumbs it down.
No,
I'm sorry.
No, it's all right. I felt I needed to throw that in there.
No, it kind of reduces it to its essence, I think, and that's the beauty of it, and that's the skill. That's why it's such a tough job to have, but such an entertaining job to have. I think the Ronald Reagan analogy is a good one. I think it's a fair one. I don't think Reagan ever trademarked his image, but he certainly had one before he became president, and I am not aware, and I was in Washington the whole time he was, of him ever making any kind of suggestion along the lines of what the governor has talked about.
Let's go to Tim and Egan. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi.
I just had a comment that it seems to me that this is a bit of a political thing in a way, and that it wasn't a couple of years ago caricaturing of some political opposition made illegal.
Can you give us a reference to what you're thinking of?
I guess what I'm trying to say is a couple of years ago there was a law passed where opponents and political couldn't put bad pictures up of the opposition, put pictures that had been caricatured or altered in some way.
I'm not familiar with anything like that. There was, about 5 years ago, a flurry of activity in a number of states to control false statements in political advertising, because political ads are very protected by the Constitution, and in response to some of the negative campaigning, there were initiatives in several states to specifically put the onus on the political candidate that he or she was not to lie about his or her opponent. Of questionable constitutional grounding, I have to add, because the Supreme Court has repeatedly said that political speech is the most protected. But, of course, knowing falsehood wouldn't be protected under any circumstances. But that's a little bit different from what we're talking about here.
Yeah, but if you're a general member of the public and you hear that people are tinkering with political advertising, which is a form of political commentary, and of course this sort of cartoon is political commentary. If you can adjust the parameters of a commercial, a political commercial, why can't you adjust the parameters of political speech on the editorial pages when it's done in graphics?
Well, again, because commercial speech is subject to different kinds of constitutional interpretation, but also because bear in mind that political advertising is already regulated in a variety of ways, including how it's paid for. So I think that, again, that just flows from that logically, although, again, I think some of those efforts were of doubtful constitutional validity.
We're talking about the new comic strip proposed for the St. Paul Pioneer Press. It's called Ventura Land. It will be chronicling the adventures of our governor. We'd like to know what you think. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're going to turn now to Greta Cunningham. She's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.
Yes, I am. Thanks, Catherine, and good morning. Democrats say it looks like John Ashcroft will be approved for Attorney General, but today his toughest opposition is set to testify. Black Missouri Supreme Court Judge Ronnie White was on the way to become a federal judge in 1999, but Ashcroft blocked his nomination. Police in Washington have made three arrests this morning after protesters scaled the headquarters of the Department of the Interior. The members of Greenpeace USA were protesting the nomination of Gail Norton to be Interior Secretary. The group is among dozens in town to protest during the inaugural events. Californians are facing a second day of rolling blackouts as the power crisis continues. The governor has declared a state of emergency and has ordered the state to temporarily start buying power from wholesalers and provide it to power-short utilities. In regional news, a women's advocacy group says 40 Minnesota women died as a result of domestic violence last year, the most since the group started keeping track in 1988. Officials of the Minnesota Coalition for Battered Women are at a loss to explain the increase. A group of DFLers will gather at the Capitol this morning to support U.S. Senator Paul Wellstone's decision to run for a third term. Wellstone announced yesterday that he will reverse a previous pledge to serve only two terms in the Senate. Wellstone says so much has changed in Washington that he's decided to run for re-election. Republicans are criticizing Wellstone for going back on his pledge to serve only two Senate terms. Former Republican Senator Rod Graham says he might challenge Wellstone next year. Graham's lost to Democrat Mark Dayton last year. There is a blowing snow advisory for the Northwest this morning. Scattered light snow or flurries statewide. Mostly cloudy and turning colder with brisk winds. Highs today near 18 to 28 degrees. At this hour, some light snow is reported in Duluth, a temperature of 23. It's cloudy in Rochester and 21. Cloudy in St. Cloud and 24. And in the Twin Cities, some light snow is falling, a temperature of 23 degrees. That's a look at the latest news.
Programming support is provided by the new and renewing members of Minnesota Public Radio.
Here's a question for you to ponder. What's the difference between a welder and a metal fabricator slash artist? Anyone? Okay, well, not much if you're David Aho of Hibbing.
All of the skills are the same. It's just what the end product turns out to be. The metalworking equipment that I use doesn't care if it's fabricating a catwalk or a platform or a ladder or a sundial.
Ah, sundials. We'll find out how the sundial man does his thing Friday night at 6 on Word of Mouth.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio. Want to remind you to make sure you stick around for the second half of Mid-Morning. A few minutes after 10, we'll be talking about the Supreme Court case heard yesterday, the case of Casey Martin. He is the golfer. He has a disabled right leg. He'd like to be able to use a cart on the PGA Tour, but the PGA has tried to block him, saying that using a cart alters the game of golf the way that it should be played. We'll be talking to an attorney who was there yesterday at the Supreme Court watching what was going on. Good conversation, good debate. You don't want to miss it. Meanwhile, we're continuing our conversation with Jane Kirtley. She's professor and director of the Silha Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. We're talking about the governor's opposition to a new comic strip in the St. Paul Pioneer Press. It's going to be called Ventura Land. We'd like to have you join this conversation. Is this strip appropriate? The governor has said he'll be casting a wary eye, wanting to make sure that the strip doesn't exploit his brand identity, doesn't exploit him for commercial use. Do you think the Pioneer Press is just trying to sell papers? That old hoary rhyme that you seem to hear every time the newspapers do something you don't like? It's 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Let's go to Scott. He's calling us from St. Paul. Scott, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning, Catherine.
Hi.
I am shocked at the way your guest basically blew by the accusation or the comment that another caller made about this being a regularly scheduled comic strip. I think there is an enormous difference between the frequency of random news stories that appear in the paper and announcing that we will have a weekly strip based on the governor. That includes his name, which is very different than the super mayor comic strip that was mentioned earlier. I mean, anyone who doesn't think that this is a blatant money-making generator by the Pioneer Press and they're hiding behind the First Amendment is crazy. I think the Pioneer Press should just admit, hey, this is a great commercial idea, and yeah, we're going to make money off it, but the fact that he's a public figure means there's nothing he can do about it.
Well,
this isn't
Scott,
a First Amendment issue.
Scott, what about the fact that they have columnists who appear three times a week? All three of them often write about the governor. They use his name. They even make up names for him. Now,
absolutely. The difference is it's still random. Though they are not saying, I am going to write about the governor every Thursday. Mm-hmm. And usually their commentary is beyond just a comic strip. If the Pioneer Press was just going to start putting in a strip, you know, every week, but maybe vary it, but didn't announce, it's the whole idea that we're announcing this. I mean, this is like a trailer for a film that's upcoming. I mean, it's not much different. And I'm just saying, be honest about it. Don't hide behind the First Amendment. If this was truly going to be just the frequency of a news item, there wouldn't be a big announcement about a weekly strip. Vastly different.
Okay, thanks, Scott.
Well, with all due respect to the caller, it's a distinction that's lost on me, and maybe I'm just missing your point. I used to live in Washington, D.C., and the City Pages, which was the city paper, which was the giveaway tabloid in town, had a column that was a watch on Marion Barry when he was mayor. It was there every week. Would that not be protected? It seems to me obviously that it is. If you have someone who is controversial, who is high profile, it is the nature, I think, of news organizations to target them for scrutiny. And this is the way that the Pioneer Press has chosen to do it. One of the points the Supreme Court made in the case involving Reverend Jerry Falwell and Hustler magazine some years ago was that different kinds of publications engage in different forms of commentary. The way the New York Times engages in political commentary is different from the way Hustler would do it. But the court is reluctant to try to say, well, this is an acceptable way to engage in that commentary because we like the way that looks. And this is not okay because it's too outrageous to be born, or it's too exploitative or something like that. That's dangerous because it means that the court is trying to impose its tastes on all of us. If the public finds that this is unfair, that this is bad, I suspect that the Pioneer Press is going to react to that, but that's the nature of the way news organizations that are for-profit entities work. I don't see that there's no distinction in my mind between saying you're going to have this as a regular feature than saying, as the Chicago Tribune did, we're going to run Mike Royko's column every week.
Let's go to Mark in Duluth. Mark, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi.
Hi.
I had a couple of very brief questions for your guest. First one was, do you know if there's any precedent for an elected official who's obviously a public figure trying to... taking that kind of action? It seems to me it would be a pretty clear First Amendment issue in favor of the paper.
Not in this country, I don't. The closest example that I can think of that parallels what we're talking about here is a couple of instances where the seal of the President of the United States or photographs of the current president, I don't just mean Clinton, this has come up with previous presidents before, was used for commercial exploitation. But the reason for those actions being taken is that there's a specific federal statute that prohibits the use of this for commercial purposes. But again, that would be very different from what the Pioneer Press is contemplating here, which I contend is not a commercial use.
So what about, for instance, those cutout stands of pictures of the presidents that you can go to Washington, D.C. and stand next to it? There's
right.
Even one of the Pope, I think.
Right.
Is that commercial use, and is that prohibited?
Well, it has not been prohibited because it continues all the time. The examples that I'm aware of have included various kinds of specific advertisements as opposed to using something to make money from. I mean, it sounds like a distinction without a difference, but I think it is different. I mean, advertisement like, I don't know, George Bush, the former President George Bush image being used at a golf club golf course or something that he'd never been to before to try to promote it as a place to come to play golf. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. Again, very different from what is being contemplated here.
Okay, let's go to Lisa in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi.
My comment has to do with Ventura has laid the groundwork for all of this to come up. He argues that he has the right to promote his name and use that for his benefit for financial and professional. I don't see why anybody else should not be able to do that, seeing especially because he has paved this road for everyone to follow.
So I'm not quite sure I'm following you. Are you suggesting that by having done this, this means that his successors in office will try to do the same thing?
No, what I'm saying is the press has criticized him for spending time writing books and promoting books and traveling and all this stuff because it is making him money. There's commercialization involved. He's using a name, his name from the past that was big, that was a big moneymaker. And whether the paper is doing this just for money or just for readership or whatever, who cares? I mean, they're protected by the Constitution. The point I'm trying to make is he doesn't want the press to utilize his name in this way, whereas he's using his name in this way all the time, and he'll continue to do so.
Well, he doesn't want the press to do it without compensating him for it. I think one of the quotations I saw in the Pioneer Press story was saying he thought he should have some input into it. And, I think that that's the key. This is about control, folks. I mean, let's be clear. It's about control. It's who's going to control political commentary about a public figure.
Let's go to Steve in Golden Valley. Steve, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you, Catherine. Thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I think my call is somewhat related to the previous one. I agree with most of the points of your guest. I think the paper can run a political commentary every day, and they choose to focus on Governor Ventura. That's fine. I do have a problem, though, with the strip being using the governor's name in the title of the strip.
Steve, yes. It's the Pioneer Press, just so you know.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I do have a problem with them using the name of the governor in the title. I think that does go a little bit too far. And I think there was a previous caller, and I think his point was, let's say the paper in Chicago thought it'd be great fun to run Venturland. Would they not pay the Pioneer Press for the privilege of running that strip? And you would imagine they'd be a lot more interested to run it with the governor's name in the title as opposed to being called, 10,000 political loons or something.
Well,
so that's my comment.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Obviously, I guess reasonable people can differ, but I have a problem with the notion that a governor or other politician would be able to copyright trademark his or her name and thereby control the use of it. I think that there's a real constitutional issue there because it really goes back to this question of controlling the commentary about you and news reporting about you. Again, I mean, I don't think that there's anything magical about calling it Ventura Land, in my view.
We're going to go to John in Maplewood. John, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I just want to say that although I think Governor Ventura does a pretty decent job as governor and I like a lot of his views and whatnot, I guess I just have a problem. Well, one thing I have a question about, if People magazine wanted to put his picture on the cover and sell magazines, or when he did that interview with Playboy, was he paid for that?
No.
Well, you know, it seems to me that if he was going to be put on the cover of People magazine, he wouldn't have a problem with it. But, you know, because this is not exactly what he wants to see of himself in the paper, then he has a problem with it. Then he comes out with this, well, his compensation thing. Well, he wouldn't get compensated by People magazine. Why should he get compensated by St. Paul Pioneer Press?
I just want to make sure I have your point here. So you're saying, look, if People magazine and other magazines and other parts of the newspaper, frankly, don't compensate him because he's the subject of their stories, you think it's unreasonable for him to expect compensation for being the subject of a cartoon?
I think it's unreasonable for him to expect compensation just because he doesn't like the content of the cartoon.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your call.
Thank you.
We're going to go to Lewis in St. Paul. Lewis, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. Say, a news flash from the Wellstone camp. He's not running for a third term. He's running for a second term. Howdy.
Okay, hi.
This is Elsie Falvey, and I ran a comic strip in the University of Minnesota paper during the late 80s, which lampooned Ken Keller. It was called Alice at the University. And we experienced the censorship of our strip by then-president, University President Ken Keller, who objected to the fact that, you know, we cast him as the Mad Hatter in Wonderland. This is a very similar situation, except, of course, that instead of a penniless college student being targeted, it's a newspaper. I think the idea that the additional difference that that the governor has his name trademarked, however, is kind of terrifying, because let's say this actually went forward, and let's say that a Bush-appointed Supreme Court supported his right to censor something based on the use of his name. That would mean that politicians all across the country would immediately begin to trademark themselves. And the next thing you know, we're going to see, you know, Rod Graham's action figures in the stores, but you can't refer to them in a negative comment, or they're going to sue you for trademark infringement. So it has a chilling effect. I mean, as all things involved with this governor do, it's loaded with comedy, and God knows we love him for that. But it does have a real chilling effect. Just because you trademark a name, suddenly you sidestep the First Amendment. I certainly hope that it doesn't come down to that, but it's certainly a consideration.
The key, you know, to any kind of a successful trademark suit is this issue of whether there would be any kind of confusion. And I can't conceive, if the Ventura Land strip bears any resemblance to what we think it's going to, that there'll ever be any confusion about the fact that this is an independently produced commentary that is not sanctioned by Governor Ventura.
Let's go to Eric in Minneapolis. Eric, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello, Catherine. I think this is great. I think I actually support the Ventura Land comic strip idea, at least the St. Paul Press going ahead with it. And I find a real wonderful kind of irony between Ventura Land and the governor's use of his position and the state of Minnesota for the XFL commentary that he's going to be doing for the football.
Interesting idea. You know, maybe we should copyright Minnesota or trademark the name Minnesota
ask
the governor to pay royalties.
You know, in order to, you know, he's exploiting his position as governor, you know, and in a profitable way. Why not?
You know, there was a crazy case in Ohio a few years ago where Ohio University went to the U.S. Patent and Trademark offices and trademarked the term Ohio, and they got into a dispute with Ohio State University, and they said that Ohio State, of course, can use the word Ohio, but they can't use Ohio standing alone on T-shirts and caps and things like that, because we, Ohio University, have trademarked it. This is the kind of thing that is fodder for a lot of laughter, but as I think the previous caller pointed out, it really can have a chilling effect on speech, and to my mind, it's particularly dangerous when it's being done by elected officials.
Let's go to Andy in Burnsville. Andy, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi.
You know, I think your commentator's got it wrong, because it always seems to me that Jesse's been more of a businessman than a politician from the beginning, and I think he's not trying to censor. He's just trying to protect his trademark because when he's done with this government thing, he's going to be out there trying to make money.
So, Andy, I just want to make it clear here. You're making a distinction between a politician and an elected official?
Well, not really. I mean, this doesn't seem to be political speech to me. It's not an editorial page. And, you know, are they going to keep the comments in the strip politically? I'm about what's going on in the news at the time. So it doesn't seem to me like it's really a political cartoon strip.
Well, it is going to be on the editorial page. That's what the Pioneer Press has announced.
Oh, I'm sorry. Was that a new change? Or
no, it's always been the case.
But, you know, this also, I think, shows the folly of discussing. I mean, not the folly, but obviously this is worthy of discussion or we wouldn't be doing it. But we are talking about a strip before it's appeared.
Right. And who knows? I mean, you know, it could be that it will be quite different from what we're imagining it's going to be. But from what the Pioneer Press has described, it sounds to me like it's going to be a political cartoon that, like Doonesbury, is in strip form rather than as a single panel. I don't see that it's going to be anything other than that.
Well, let's go to Jim in St. Paul. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning, Catherine. Thank you and Jane for this show. I love the idea of the
the political cartoon in the St. Paul paper. I just I would love to see it in addition as a cartoon, as an animated cartoon on any of the local television programs too, which is something I don't think you guys have talked about yet. In the late 80s and early 90s, I worked at an animation studio in the Twin Cities here that worked with Mike Peters, editorial cartoonist, and we used to do 3 animated cartoons for NBC News and the Today Show a week. And I'd love to see something like that. We used people like Shirley Dirks and Tim Russell, who does a great Jesse Ventura, by the way. And I'd love to see something like that as an animated cartoon on TV, too.
Okay, thanks. Let's go to Kathy in Bloomington. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thank you. I support Governor Ventura's position on this because I see it not as a single political cartoon, but as a weekly cartoon series where someone else is taking his image and putting their own words into it. And I don't think it's within the realm of possibilities that there could be some confusion there.
Oh, and the confusion would be what?
What is being said in the cartoon series and the positions that Governor Ventura takes on things.
And why does the fact that it would be weekly, why does that trouble you?
Because there have been people that have been on the air saying that it is a political cartoon. My impression of a political cartoon is a single cartoon that comes out in the paper, and it's not the same cartoon or the same individuals week after week after week, whereas this would be an ongoing series with the image of Governor Ventura.
I mean, it would be, but I guess I'm still somewhat at a loss as to why that makes it different, why that makes it not commentary, why that makes it not protected speech. Again, we can only imagine what it's going to look like, but if we draw a parallel to, say, the Doonesbury strip, most people regard that as an editorial cartoon. Indeed, it won a Pulitzer Prize for editorial commentary. I think getting hung up on the format is a very dangerous thing. As I suggested before, the Supreme Court has made clear that it's reluctant to do that. There are all kinds of ways to express our political viewpoints, and this just happens to be the way the Pioneer Press has chosen to do it. To have a regular commentary on Jesse Ventura strikes me as something, frankly, that's overdue, given the colorful nature of this particular governor. I'm sort of amazed that no Twin Cities media have chosen to do something like this sooner.
Let's go to Russ in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Morning, Catherine.
Hi.
I wanted to say that I first think that his motivations are certainly about greed and not about being lampooned in the press. He seems to have pretty thick skin about that and seems to invite that at times. But I'm wondering how this differs from, say, an unauthorized biography of a politician where there's always a flap over things like that.
Well, you know, there are unauthorized biographies, and people like Frank Sinatra used to try to stop them, and they didn't. They weren't very successful doing it, again, because of the First Amendment. You can love it or hate it, but the fact is the First Amendment gives us tremendous ability to protect ourselves as speakers from being stopped by the rich and the powerful.
Let's go to John in Arden Hills. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
I just have one little comment, and that is I've never bought the paper, but this cartoon is going to induce me to buy the paper once a week, and so perhaps there is some validity in the statement that this is a money-making venture for the paper.
Okay.
And again, I would say that the decision of a news organization to run any particular feature, whether it's somebody's column or something like this, is arguably a money-making option. News organizations operate for the purposes of making a profit. There's no secret about that. They serve other purposes, too, which is informing the public and hopefully encouraging the public to think about important issues.
Let's go to Tom in Bloomington. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
My question is, I don't really have an opinion on this issue, but I think that it's a little bit different in that Jesse Ventura is not only a politician, but he's also what I think many would consider a celebrity. And I was wondering what your guest's comments would be as to if a newspaper were going to choose to run a comic strip about, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Do you think there would be any valid, legal problems in that?
I think not, as long as it was commentary as opposed to advertising type of exploitation or exploiting for a particular product. But again, it does seem to me that we're dealing with a different situation and a very clearly different situation when you're talking about an elected official. Having said that, though, I would underscore that, especially in this past presidential administration, celebrities have had very, very great influence on political issues in this country and social issues. And the notion that a celebrity, as distinguished from a politician, gets special protection is, I think, a dangerous one, given the way our society has been playing out. Those people are influential, and I think that when they meddle in political issues or when they comment on political issues, they become fair game for commentary by the news media.
Are we making distinctions still between celebrities and politicians?
Well, the distinction that I'm drawing is that I think that when you have someone who's been elected to a public office who has taken an oath to uphold the Constitution, I think they have some special obligations to put up with this kind of commentary and not to make what I consider to be really outrageous accusations that they ought to be able to be getting a take from this or being paid for this. A celebrity, I think, as a matter of law, from a libel standpoint, operates under very similar kinds of restrictions. In terms of exploiting their image, there may be different legal distinctions, but it seems to me that an elected official who's supposed to be upholding the Constitution should simply say, look, for the purposes of the time that I'm governor of this state or that I'm senator from this state or that I'm president of the United States, I have to put the First Amendment ahead of my personal profit.
Let's go to Jim in Minneapolis. Jim, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Uh-huh.
I support the Pioneer Press's efforts to satirize the governor. But I'm curious if a network news or a network television channel were to create a weekly cartoon like The Simpsons or something like that, would that be equally protected, and would that be seen as purely a for-profit motive?
Well, if you're talking about something like The Simpsons that is entertainment as opposed to something that the Pioneer Press is doing that they're putting on their editorial page, there might be a distinction in people's minds about whether it's entertainment or not. But again, I think insofar as the speech is concerned, the program itself, the cartoon itself, they enjoy the same kind of First Amendment protection. The only issue that I think may present some interesting questions, and we're not even anywhere near that yet, is the subsequent exploitation of Ventura Land for other kinds of consumer products, for example. If they start putting Ventura Land on coffee mugs or greeting cards or something like that, then we might have something to talk about from a legal standpoint. But it seems to me that as long as it's airing as a cartoon, running in the paper on the editorial page, it's pure commentary, it's protected speech.
So tell us what you think we're going to see in the weeks ahead.
Oh, I think it's going to be very entertaining. I mean, I hope that this strip lives up to the buzz that it's generated. I mean, I hope we're not all going to look at it the first Sunday and say, oh, is this what all the flap was about? I hope that it's going to be provocative. I hope that it's going to get some people thinking and laughing. And if it does that, then I think it's serving a great purpose.
All right. And also, do you think that we're going to see even more reaction from the governor, or do you think that that will fade away?
Obviously, it's going to depend to a certain extent on the content of the strip, but I would hope that cooler heads will prevail and the governor will perhaps move on to other topics.
All right. Jane Kirtley, I want to thank you for joining us today.
It's been my pleasure.
Jane Kirtley is a professor and director of the Silha Center for the Study of Media Ethics and Law at the School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota. Of course, we want to remind you to stick around for the second half of Mid-Morning. We'll be talking to Reed McKenzie. He is a Minneapolis attorney who's a member of the Executive Committee of the U.S. Golf Association. He was at the Supreme Court yesterday to hear the debate over whether a disabled pro golfer, Casey Martin, should be allowed to ride in a golf cart at PGA Tour events. That's all coming up just a few minutes after 10 here on Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Minnesota Public Radio.
The West Coast energy crisis has many businesses begging for a change.
Unless the incoming administration